Welcome back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined today by my friend and colleague Patrick McEwen, also known as Lax Film Room. Patrick, it's been far too long, and we had an opportunity to cross paths on a lacrosse field on Saturday afternoon for the first time in more than 3 months. It felt great. It felt weird. It felt weird both in the sense that it was different, but also in the sense that it was normal. And my first question for you is, I know you were particularly concerned about your exposure to the sun. How are you managing your sunburn today?
I applied the sunscreen before I left. It was just one game. I applied sunscreen at halftime, and I think that I escaped unsunburned.
You certainly did not find a razor since March 12th. Do you think that the beard contributed to the shade provided from the sun?
For sure. It makes the sunscreening process a little bit more difficult as you can get it into your beard. But yeah, for sure. It's one of the advantages. It's nature's sunscreen.
For all of the intrigue around both your facial hair growth and our ability to watch a really exciting game as the Crabs 22s emerged 10-9 victors in overtime over the T91 Maryland Fire 22s that featured, no doubt, a dozen or potentially two dozen future Division I players on them. I wanted to talk to you because last week, Darren Ravella, the Action Network, reported that William Hill, a longtime UK-established sports betting book, had posted lines and was going to be posting lines around the PLL Championship Series. We talked a little bit about it with Paul Carcaterra on Friday, and you and Kyle Devitt wrote about the actual odds, meaning the, you know, which teams were good bets and which teams were bad bets for InsideLacrosse.com on Friday. But there's so much more to this story, and I'm really excited to talk to you about it. And I think you and I share passion around the collision and intersection of sports media, sports industry, sports analytics, and sports wagering. And before we talk about the PLL specifically, I think that for this listener audience, who I'm not going to take for granted is necessarily a huge sports betting audience, a little bit about what it actually entails, why it's important for lacrosse, and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, for me, I just wanted to share my reaction when this came out. The conversation really started in May when the PLL announced their partnership with Genius Sports, another UK-based outfit that was going to be their data and integrity partner. Now, there were certainly a lot of details around that announcement that weren't immediately addressed, such as, you know, what was the extent of stat keeping and stat distribution going to be? But one of the things that we knew most clearly was that until the Genius partnership was going to turn into a partnership with a betting outfit, now it's not even right. It's not necessarily a partnership. It's kind of a unilateral decision on behalf of William Hill or any of these other books to offer lines on this, but it certainly was the hoped for outcome within PLL offices, the PLL office, and within the lacrosse community at large. Until that happened, ultimately that was a partnership that didn't flourish. It didn't come to fruition. So this past week's announcement was really significant in the sense that it represented another meaningful step. Now there's still a lot of unknown in terms of what's going to come next. First and foremost, will another book pick up PLL wagers? Secondly, what is William Hill's plan for game lines, game over-unders, prop bets, the things that typically come after you create your championship future odds? And then in addition to that, will there be some sort of marketing partnership between PLL and a particular sports book that provides some financial incentive back to PLL? Because that's one of the really important things to be mindful of when it comes to this current situation. Absolutely, PLL wants William Hill to be posting lines for its games and for its teams and season-long championship odds because that increases interest among fans. But it doesn't necessarily impact PLL's pocketbook directly the way that it would if they were to have announced a marketing partnership with a particular sports book. All of that needs to be settled and probably will be over the course of the next month. But my reaction when these lines came out was thumbs up. Job well done, because I know how hard it is to facilitate this type of arrangement, particularly for a second-year league like PLL, where history is so important to getting that integrity that is necessary for a sports book to take your action. And then building on top of that, all of the other kind of like built-in disadvantages of the model, you know, the fact that there isn't the same level of transparency as there would be with a CBA or multi-entity ownership. So I was surprised but impressed. That was my main reaction when this news came out. What was yours?
Very similarly, that I think this was, I think, a hurdle in the growth of the league that I did not expect them to get past so early in the history of the league. And I think it really illustrates a job well done by the league.
And so the nature of sports betting is the intersection of risk versus risk assessment versus probability. And championship future odds are, there's seven teams, one of them's going to win the championship. So the odds, you know, for each individual team, if all of them were equal, would be 1 in 7. We know, obviously, that they are not equal. We know that, number one, there were only 6 teams last year, so we've got a new team and we've got a lot of players taken off of each of the other 6 teams. And then separately, this is a league where last year they played a 10-game regular season into a 3-round playoff, and this year they're going to play a 4-game pool play tournament into a 3-round playoff where the number one seed gets the bye. So from a probability standpoint, there is so much what I would call uncertainty, right? This is a roadmap that has yet to be driven by PLL or really by any other league. Broadly, not specifically about PLL, but broadly, when you think about that, and certainly if you follow any of the conversation around the NBA and what their plan for restarting the season looks like with the 22 teams reporting to Disney and playing 8 seeding games and then a traditional tournament but without home court advantage and all the uncertainty around player availability, both players opting in versus opting out, players contracting the virus and players getting injured, sportsbooks are kind of, I don't want to say throwing their hands up, but they're absolutely regarding this event as new territory. And so for PLL, it's that times 10 or to the 10th power. What do you think, or where does your mind begin when it comes to just thinking about the idea of trying to come up with lines for something for which there is such little track record?
I think you can read into what they did. And I'm not sure. It's one of those things of, I think if they would have had to go a different route in order to come up with lines they thought would work, I don't think they would have put in the effort. I can't imagine it's worth it. The amount of action they're going to see on these lines is worth it to bring in someone like a lacrosse expert who has broken down, you know, all the on-field stuff and the lines to really advise them on, you know, what does Rob Pinnell going to Atlas mean in terms of how should that impact the lines. It's more or less just the results of last year converted into odds with throwing the water dogs in as the least favored, I guess, the team with the lowest odds to win the championship.
So one of the things that I thought was really interesting in the piece that you wrote with Kyle was, you know, if you've got $100 set aside to bet on PLL this summer, don't bet all $100 on championship futures. Why is that?
So I think it's, one is championship futures in any sport. Like if you look at the sum total of the probability of the odds, they add up to more than one more than other bets, such as bets on games. And particularly it's the case with long shots, which, like, and for example, in the NBA, where we're very certain, you know, some of the 8th and 9th seeds are not going to win an NBA championship, that you're talking like 100-to-1 type odds on those teams. You just don't necessarily get great odds there. I think it's also, if you fancy yourself, if you are interested just in the number of wagers that you're going to be able to make on the PLL this summer, if you tie up all your money betting now, in something that you're not going to know the result of until the end of the championship series, you waste a lot of opportunities to place more, to use that money to place more bets during the tournament.
Yeah, that second point was the one that kind of clicked for me. I hadn't really thought about it in that context, but it absolutely does make sense. You know, if you, again, have $100 allotted to this, then you use all 100 on, you know, betting the Whipsnakes are going to win the championship. Well, that means that you have to wait for everything to be over before you know whether or not you can plow your winnings back into betting on this. But, you know,
if you really think the Whipsnakes are going to win the championship, you're going to have an opportunity to make a bet on that up to and including the day of the championship game.
Right, right.
And so you're not really missing out on anything by not jumping, by not throwing a bunch of money at any of these teams right now.
So I want to come back to some of the specifics at the end of this podcast, but you know, I wanted to have you on to discuss this, not just because of your interest and not just because of your background. I was a little bit remiss in making sure that the audience either knew or remembered that, you know, you are a math mind. You are the data specialist at Inside Lacrosse, and you look at risk assessment and probability routinely throughout the course of your day, both in terms of just how you go about your business as well as within your role at Inside Lacrosse. But before we get to anything specifically more about William Hill's lines on the PLL Championship Series, just as sports fans, I think that there's some things that we need to be mindful of. So first thing is that there's a tone of excitement and positivity and optimism in our voices, but I think we need to provide a necessary disclaimer and offsetting understanding. And I think that this was really well stated by Paul on that podcast that I referenced from last week, which was that his grandfather was a degenerate gambler. Sports betting is not a consequenceless decision. There are folks in my social circle who have suffered from it greatly. But, you know, like most things that are considered vices, in moderation, they can provide value. And so in the same way that anything that you do or consume that has risk or hazardous effects, you need to be mindful of them, so too with sports betting. So, you know, certainly it's really important not only to be cognizant of that, but also to understand that we're in a moment in time in U.S. government, U.S. legal process, where more and more states are legalizing sports betting in a variety of ways. And I believe 11 states currently have some form of legalized sports betting, whereas as recently as 2000. Oh man, what was this Supreme Court case? 2018, that essentially legalized it in states other than Nevada. We've seen, I believe that would mean 10, have either changed their sports betting laws, and they've done so in two ways. First is on-site in a book. Oftentimes you've seen those open up in casinos, or you've seen them open up at horse tracks, or you've seen them open up in some places in and around stadiums. Or online, where there are currently 6 states that allow for online sports betting through a variety of operators, William Hill being one. But just to round out the perspective, Caesars, MGM, really long-standing casinos in Vegas that have had long-standing sports books. And then at the other end of the spectrum, technology companies like DraftKings and FanDuel that have ventured into this area as well. So I don't have the list of the 6 states committed to memory. I know that they tend not to be lacrosse hotbeds, with the exception of New Jersey. And I know that as recently as Sunday, I confirmed that lacrosse had been added to William Hill's navigation and that these championship future odds for PLL were available to be wagered upon.
Before you go on, it's also worth mentioning that I am someone who the way that I look at things is not similar to most people. To put it mildly, and weirdly, I have discovered that I do not enjoy gambling on sports, because the odds are always stacked against you unless you know more than the average person placing a bet significantly in order to have a positive return. And so I actually do not, weirdly, I love paying attention to sports gambling. And reading about it and dissecting and thinking about what are good wagers, but I weirdly don't enjoy placing them, because always in the back of my mind is knowing that there's a reason that sports books make money, and it's because the average person placing a bet ends up losing money.
Right. And that is another one of the reasons that you're the perfect person to have this conversation with, because you're dispassionate in the sense that you understand it, but you're not playing a line. You're not playing an angle. Before moving on, I do want to ask, how do you regard sports betting versus playing traditional card games, not poker, but blackjack or other, you know, gambling games, roulette or craps? How do you regard sports betting versus those? And how do you regard it versus day trading and trying to play the stock market?
Like, I have the same perspective. I, like, have been to casinos, like, twice and just do not enjoy the experience whatsoever.
Got it. So,
because I just know in my mind, it's like, okay, playing blackjack, like, I'm like, the like, in the long run, I'm going to lose. I can't get over that fact that I know the odds are stacked against me. And so even through low number, like when it's like in low number situations, that isn't an enjoy, like the potential for a positive outcome doesn't excite me enough to make it an enjoyable experience.
All that being said, you did say that you like knowing about the gambling side or the betting side of sports.
Oh, yeah. I think it's hugely fascinating.
Go on. Like, let me. You have carte blanche. Go whichever direction you want to go with why you find it hugely fascinating.
Just because sports gambling, I feel like it's so tied into sports analytics. Because there's sports analytics development and progress is a hugely expensive undertaking. And with rare exception, I think throughout history, things have all been, it's driven on two fronts. One is teams investing in it, looking for a competitive advantage, and gamblers investing in it. And so one of the things that I really enjoy about it is you end up the interest and money in sports gambling leads to financially viable, very niche content sites that delve into the numbers on things like football and basketball that are their core audience is gamblers.
And where what does the future hold for lacrosse as far as that's concerned? In a scenario where there's a greater than expected handle, which is the term for the total dollars bet on a certain wager, aggregate handle for PLL betting this summer, and that tips off some sort of arms race or gold rush on lacrosse analytics, what are some of the things that you would hope to see?
I think what you would be interesting to see the potential for what somebody could put together with a subscription-based site focused on PLL gambling in terms of where people are willing to, because that just it puts money into coverage of the sport that then pays itself back in terms of the ability, you know, particularly my enjoyment of sports is so driven by looking at, you know, the things in depth in a way that in some cases the gambling money is what is funding the ability of someone to be able to do that.
And so one of the things that I know is really important for you that you want to see developed, that you have seen developed meaningfully in basketball, is shot data, particularly where shots are taken, where goals are scored from, who is taking them, with what frequency, on and on. Do you think, to what extent do you think that's realistic coming away from an event like this?
You've already, it's already happening. The PLL has produced shot charts. And I think one big, but I think you haven't seen that data utilized anywhere close to the capacity in which it could be utilized. Because there isn't enough of an incentive to drive the amount of time and effort it would take to do that.
So when you think about the future of lacrosse content, are there any other things that you're just kind of like immediately turning your eye toward on the basis of this development?
I think in terms of one of the frustrating things for me following the league has been sometimes just like the lack of in the way in which stuff like signing players from the MLL comes out, where they wait and announce the batch of all 16 of them. I think I guess it probably makes sense given the situation that they have right now. But I think in a world where people are looking at how do those signings impact, you know, various championship odds. I think it changes the strategy and how that stuff gets announced, and it comes out more as it happens in a way that I think that's very exciting for me as a lacrosse fan.
And you're talking about kind of two competing components, one being transparency and the other being interest being driven by third-party media. Obviously, we represent a part of that, but it's also telling that, you know, this was a story that was initially broken by, as I mentioned at the top, Darren Revelle of the Action Network. Darren Revelle, former ESPN reporter, large social media following, the Action Network, an emerging sports media platform dedicated to sports betting. You know, this is very much within his and that outfit's wheelhouse, and the expectation that that news might have held longer, you know, wasn't the case, because PL's decision to play a championship series in July in Utah is really high interest, and they're having lines be placed on it by a betting outfit like William Hill was as high interest or equally high interest or certainly very high interest. And so as a result, like that story got picked up and it got legs. And that's a reflection of what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the type of thing that wasn't happening to them largely previously, that even when you had media outlets breaking news of PLL stuff, a lot of times it was done in stories that were quoting people from the PLL. So clearly they were aware of it and involved in one capacity or another. I think that the Utah scoop came out of women's soccer reporting, essentially.
Yeah.
Is what sort of allowed somebody else to get to break that information. And in this case it was, you know, the gambling world. And so as it touches on more stuff like that, it just becomes a harder, it breaks out of lacrosse media and into more areas like that. And it provides for a lot more information and coverage that I'm excited to kind of to be able to consume as a lacrosse fan.
So as I mentioned, I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking specifically about, you know, these futures odds that were set. And you made the point earlier that futures odds tend not to be as good as game odds, or in some cases, particular prop bet odds, over-unders, etc. So typically when you bet on a spread in football, you have to wager $110 to win 100 on a odds bet, right? So now on the other hand, if it were a money line, then obviously you're paying, it's reflective of what that spread otherwise would be. So it's the difference between a spread versus betting on which team is going to win the game. An over-under is typically priced the same way as a spread would be priced. And that minus 110 represents the vig. That is the house's share. That is where they mitigate their risk, meaning that if they have equal action on both sides, they essentially get 10% of they get an additional 10% coming away from what was in total bet, right? Because otherwise, if you have 50% betting on both sides, one team wins, that entire 50% that was bet on the losing side goes to the winning side. The house doesn't get anything for hosting that bet. In the scenario when they have the minus 110 to win 100, then they get 10% off of the winning sides, and that's their cut of the action. So in a scenario where you're betting on championship odds, you know, typically you're placing a dollar figure on a team to win, and the vig, so to speak, is priced into the odds. And so when you kind of just consider it on the basis of rolling that forward, right, considering other odds, do you think lacrosse is better, games are better bet by a spread or by money line?
That is a good question. I always just in general, I feel like you, it's a different discussion over what's going to happen. And I think that the one interesting thing about the PLL is that I think is going to appear this in the pool play games and going forward is that goal differential is the tiebreaker. And I think last season, a lot of players and coaches didn't really understand what that meant for most of the season until the final 2 weeks when they started looking at it and realizing that, oh, somebody's going to miss an opportunity to win a championship if their goal differential is 2 goals below another team's. And so we need to play to the final whistle that every goal counts. And I think now in the second season, now that we, especially given that we had a three-way tie last season where goal differential cost a team a chance at playing for a championship in the postseason, you're going to see all the veteran players are now going to understand that, and you're going to see teams potentially trying to score goals up two in the final 30 seconds of a game. Maybe they hold for one and take the last shot, but they're going to I think potentially legitimately try to score a goal there. Whereas before they may have just held, they would just held the ball and run out the clock. And so I think betting, you're going to end up with like it just thinking of the Scott Van Pelt bad beats segment. I think you're not going to run into a case where say like a team is up by 5 goals and the spread is 3.5 and they just don't care in the final 20 seconds and give up 2 terrible goals. You're going to see, at least in pool play, you're going to see teams playing to the final whistle.
Well, it's not really an argument for one way or the other for the question that I ask, but it is an interesting
I mean,
consideration.
I think it makes me on balance, makes me more likely to want to bet the spread in those pool play games because you just because I'm more confident that if there's a spread of, of 3.5 goals or something, that a team isn't going to take the foot off the gas and really have been 4, 5, 6 goals better throughout the course of the game and end up only winning by 3 because of what they did in the last 3 minutes. So it makes me more like, which some of that I think maybe that's just like, I don't know, and I presumably the people setting the spreads will maybe figure that out. I don't know if they are aware of that right now. So maybe you get an advantage. You think there's potentially an advantage in betting for a big favorite early in the first couple games. You're more likely to be willing to lay the goals on the spread because of that factor in the first game or two.
And we don't know whether over-unders or prop bets will be available, but if over-unders are offered, what is your attitude toward game totals in lacrosse versus game totals in other sports?
That's a good. I don't know that I have any good similarities or differences to offer you there.
Okay, fair. I love when someone says, I don't know. But if you figure it out, tweet about it because I'm going to want to know.
Yeah, that I haven't, I guess. I mean, potentially I mean, like, there's stuff you have to factor in, like the potential for a faceoff guy to help you a team with a good, great offense run up the score. But I mean, that all gets factored into just if you're just looking at like how does past performance predict future performance, you
Right.
know. I don't know that there's a big, a big difference in teams that tend to score about 10 goals, like, or give up, like if teams are scoring and giving up, 20 goals a game, that's probably about what they're going to do in the future.
It's interesting because I think when you think about it in the context of how people would have regarded PLL based on the rule set that was laid out heading into its inaugural season, folks would have expected goals to be a lot more plentiful than they ended up being. I mean, the score lines for these games is equivalent to the score lines for college lacrosse games, even though, with 10 fewer yards in the field and a 52-second shot clock, teams are incentivized to play a lot faster and take a lot more shots on a per second basis. The difference is that the games are only 48 minutes, and so it balances out. Like, that turns out that 12 minutes goes a long way. I just feel like people didn't realize exactly what the extent of taking 20% of the game away was going to yield in terms of final goal scores in comparison to all the other rules that were laid out.
Yeah, and they don't stop not stopping the clock on every like ball that goes out of bounds
Right.
makes it even shorter, which they did because it helps you ensure consistency for TV purposes.
Right.
Yeah, I think for sure. I think it's just one of people didn't know because you had factors going both ways. You had the increase, you had like the field being shorter, the shot clock being shorter, and the 2-point line being a yard in all lent itself more towards more scoring, but the shorter game lent itself towards less, and it ended up, I think, about balancing out, right?
Right. Yeah, I would say
Yeah, I
so.
guess compared to college, but I think that there's way far fewer goals than MLL games.
So I've teased it now a couple of times, but I do think that we can't get out of this podcast without talking a little bit about the actual odds themselves. So to quickly run through them, the Whip Snakes, defending champions, are the favorites at 3-1, and then the Archers and Redwoods, who I believe were both semifinalists. Is that right? Didn't the Redwoods beat the Archers?
They did. That was in the third and fourth place game,
Okay.
and then the Archers ended up winning the consolation bracket after lost to the Redwoods.
Right. So those two teams both enter the season with 9-2 odds. In the assessment from you and Kyle, it was deemed that both the Archers and Redwoods were better bets than the Whip Snakes because primarily of all the talent that the Whip Snakes lost to their expansion.
Well, and just the shorter odds for the Whip Snakes.
Right.
In terms of value, that I'm not entirely sure. I think all those teams are the favorites, and I'm not sure that it's I think it's tough to pick among them. They're all there's a reason to prefer to prefer each of the teams. But I'm not sure that there's a huge difference in terms of their odds to actually win it. And so in that case, why not take the better odds? From a gambling perspective.
So then, halfway through the field, you kind of shifted the philosophy. I thought that your lead sentence to explaining the Whip Snakes' future odds was an appropriate one, which is that you shouldn't place a bet on a team that you don't believe can win the championship. And there's only one team that you know definitively can win the championship, and it's the Whip Snakes because they already have. Whereas, for number four, you identified the expansion Water Dogs, who are the long shot at 9-1. And I assume that was primarily viewed as a value play. Is that right?
For sure. And I think it's an interesting, it's a criticism of the expansion draft that I know at least one coach and a couple players were not super thrilled about was how stacked in favor of the Water Dogs it was. Given that they got to assemble their team, they got to pick 18 players that were the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th best players on other teams. So the last five players on the Water Dogs roster should all be better than the last five players on every other team.
Can you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah, so the 18th player on the Water Dogs roster they picked in the expansion draft was the 13th best player on another team's roster, given they got to protect 10, and you can take th they could take 18 players, which would mean potentially taking three players from each of the other teams.
And you don't think that is meaningfully offset by the fact that it suggests that their best player is the 61st best player in the league?
Potentially. I mean, that's the arguments either way. That's why they're not number one. We're not set, the argument isn't that they are like they should be favored to win, just relative that they're probably, I wouldn't put them, I for certainly I certainly wouldn't have them as the least likely team to win the championship.
So, moving along in that direction, the fifth best bet, as identified by you and Kyle, were Chrome at 8-1, which essentially represented the second long shot, and they were pretty objectively the worst team in PLL last season.
Yeah, and I think there's sort of two reasons for the optimism. The big one is Tim Sedan has, I think one of the things we saw last season in the PLL was that having a coach with pro experience mattered. In that the two teams that met in the championship game both had coaches with multiple seasons of pro experience. And so the Chrome is bringing in a coach who has a track record of success in the MLL and a track record of success with a number of players on his current roster. And then secondly, I think you have in Jordan Wolf, you have a championship type number one. And I think it gives them it's just I think just given the closeness of the league, it's hard to argue. I just think it, I don't our assessment was just that their odds of winning a championship aren't that much worse than any other the other teams.
And to that extent, rounding out the final two selections are the Chaos, whose odds are 4-1, and Atlas, whose odds are 11-2.
Yeah, and so with the Chaos, I think there's an argument. They had the best record in the league, but I think it's one of those things of when it came down to it in the playoffs and other teams made adjustments, they did not. They had a run and gun style that caught people by surprise early, and then once teams figured that out, they really didn't have any answers. And they're a team that it's hard really to see what moves they made in the offseason that what is the argument of why they're any why of what they did to improve the team? They don't have it. They didn't add any draft picks, college draft picks, to their roster. So, when you have other teams, we think of a much better chance to win the championship, and you're only getting odds that are half as favorable as the Chrome. It's hard to make a recommendation to bet on that team. And then with the Atlas, I think it's just fundamentally Kyle and I are of the assessment we don't think that's a championship team. And so it's hard, especially when you have other teams that you're getting better odds on. We struggle to come up with a reason to suggest betting on the Atlas.
So one of the things that's pretty illustrative to how wise a certain bet is versus another is what are the gaps, what are the groupings between 3-1, the favorite, and 9-1, the long shot. When you watch horse racing, for example, that would be a very tightly grouped field. How tightly grouped do you consider this field to be?
I think it is tightly grouped. I think especially it's also just all driven by I was thinking about it as one of the things I think that is interesting about the fact that William Hill like that they got someone to post odds and take bets on this field given the uncertainty of the environment is that you like how dramatically do these odds shift if a player like say if Matt Rambo tests positive when he shows up in Utah. And so pretty dramatically, and I'm not sure that there has ever been like a sort of a stress test of the ability of the lacrosse inf like media infrastructure in terms of how is that news going to be disseminated when getting that information 15 minutes before somebody else could mean a big monetary difference. It's not something that we've ever had to deal with in the lacrosse world.
And I think that's why at the outset of this podcast, we talked about this development as being the intersection between sports media, sports industry, sports analytics, and sports betting. And when you come to an intersection with those four roads intersecting, it creates a lot of intrigue. And I think there are a lot of reasons why this is a really big deal for lacrosse. And certainly, I want to restate that this isn't a exclusively optimistic point of view. We understand that there are risks associated with the continued legalization of sports betting in the United States and entities becoming more actively involved in them, but it's certainly intriguing.
I don't know what their plan is to disseminate information like to about positive tests and get it out there and how that impacts things. You obviously have certainly, you're talking about distributing players' personal health information. And I like it's if I don't I don't I assume they have thought of this and have a plan. And knowing that people are in the league, I assume that they, it's a, I would I'm I think there's no reason to assume it's anything other than a good plan. It's just if it goes wrong, you know, it's a new area of criticism for the league that is going to potentially really upset some people if you are losing money as a result of it. That would have been something that wasn't a big deal previously for them. Now it becomes a huge deal potentially. I guess it's also something like I think something worse is an interesting. I think it's an interesting kind of milestone for field lacrosse, and that this really, I feel like for the first time for pro field lacrosse, there has been the stakes of sort of third party accountability have been increased substantially, in a way that really has never existed because there hasn't ever been a players union, which I think is just an interesting, it's, I don't know, a step forward, certainly for the sport. I think it's something that has to a degree been responsible for for some of the struggles of the sport, is that there wasn't a good mechanism for accountability to force them to continually improve things.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And I think that when you combine that factor with the additional investment that will presumably come via the desire to compete, the desire to win, and I'm not talking about on the field, I'm talking about among bettors, and whether it's access to content that's going to make them more informed in their wagering, or whatever the case may be. I mean, you know, you made this point previously, not on the podcast, but in prior conversation, that this is going to be a boon for NBC Gold sponsorships, or subscriptions rather, because folks who are going to want to bet on PLL are going to want to make sure that they have opportunities to see every single game.
For sure. That I think, yeah, and just it gives you a reason of, if you were on the fence before, if you have bets, you're going to want to watch the outcome of your bets. That's for a lot of people is the fun of betting on sports, is that it gives you a stake in the game, in the outcome, that you get to enjoy the ups and downs of winning and losing the same way that athletes get to do when they play in the games.
Well, to that extent, we are less than a month away from being able to watch Big Cat and PFT, who are now owners of the Water Dogs. I don't know. I guess I wonder if their ownership prevents them from being allowed to bet on games. But that being said, we're going to see a lot of folks reacting. And to your point, we might see a Bad Beat segment appear on SVP SportsCenter. But until then, we're anxiously awaiting all the additional developments that we cited at the top of the podcast with respect to this continually evolving aspect of the pro lacrosse season as we look forward to the PLL Championship Series in Utah this July. And Patrick, as always, we appreciate you joining us on the podcast. Your perspective, as you mentioned, is very unique. And even though we know that we won't be asking you about what your wagers are, we will be reinstating Inside Lacrosse's gambling content. I don't know what the word was for what we did last year. We kind of experimented more than anything else. And, you know, I'm going to toot my own horn by saying that I ruined it in the first 10 seconds of the season by betting on Stephen Kelly to score the opening faceoff, or the inaugural goal of the inaugural season.
I also want to say, though, to it, it turned out that the odds of that Stephen Kelly goal were exactly perfect.
Go on.
And that they were 40-1. And Stephen Kelly, over the course of the season, scored 3 of the Archers' 120 regular season goals, or 1 in 40.
All right, so we were both right.
So they have won that bet. I feel like that's a victory for odds setting.
There you go. All right, until next time.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.